Hello, welcome back to the Business Bunker Show here on channelradio.co.uk/2 in association with bizradio.co.uk. Playing a little bit of music for you there.
Did you play it for me? Because I'm leaving.
Yeah, well, kind of. It was a bit...
She's going,
yeah. Yeah, no, no, no. No, it was my cheesy tunage because we got a celebrant to talk to. But, of course, we got a bit mixed up because normally the format of the show is we play a tune in between the first half of the show, and we didn't get round to it because we got all tied up in what we were talking about.
Ear, you did well.
With what?
You didn't rant.
Did I not?
No, you were very balanced and very calm, exactly what we prescribed.
Mm.
Why?
Huh?
Do you want to rant?
No.
How interesting. So when we want you to rant... You don't want to rant, and when you do want to rant, off you go.
Well, exactly.
What's going on, well, exactly. Mr. Andrews?
I don't want to be predictable, do I?
Wow. Who knew? Who knew?
Yeah, well, there you go. Yeah. So, anyway, loads of people are asking me, why are you playing the tune at the end of the news? Do you want to know the real answer? Because we were all in a loo.
I was here.
Oh, you were making coffee, weren't you? Bird was making coffee.
Doing the dishes, and doing the ironing.
And mopping up around the studio.
Yeah, that's women's empowerment for you.
Absolutely. I'll tell you what. Do you want to read something that's not an event?
I haven't got anything that
that's
isn't
an event.
That's not an event? No.
Although some of those events are happening because they're later in the year.
I don't think they will be.
Yeah, they will.
There's one in September.
Yeah, they will. Well, there you go. That'll be happening.
Do you reckon?
Yeah, of course I do.
We might all be, you know, Armageddon, G.I. Joe.
Eat
our cats and dogs.
Yeah, exactly.
You know what I mean?
Well, exactly. That's what I said. If there are some events being cancelled in June and July, and I said, listen, if this is still going on in June and July, cancelling an event will be the last of our problems because, you know, we will really be in trouble. I don't expect this to last much longer than about 6-7 weeks longer.
Interesting.
That's my prediction. And I'll tell you what will end it. Something else happening. So it goes off the front page of the news. Once it goes off the front page of the news, everybody ignores it. That's, you know, it's what happens. You know, if something else happens, if a piece of breaking news, if we get hit by an asteroid or, you know, there's a volcanic eruption or something happens.
Mm. Or toilet rolls come back on the shelf.
Or somebody invents a replacement for toilet rolls.
Why aren't Andrex absolutely working 36 hours in a day?
Well, they probably are.
Will produce start to be more, you know, so these, we've gone now demand. We've gone over demand that is normal.
Hmm.
Will they up their demand to provide for the demand that's already there?
Well, I don't think they should because from a business planning point of view, what I was trying to say delicately about toilet roll.
Don't be delicate.
No, but what I was trying to say delicately about...
It's not a subject you can be delicate about, is it?
Toilet roll has two functions, okay?
Blowing your nose.
And blowing your nose is the one that's caused the problem because toilet roll is vastly cheaper than tissues. And that's the reason people bought a lot of toilet rolls.
Really?
That is the reason people bought toilet rolls, because they're vastly cheaper than tissues and they expected to have to use tissues. But the coronavirus isn't a cold virus, yeah? So you don't actually have a runny nose with it, so you didn't need them anyway. But the being serious for a moment, and it was a long time ago, but I actually worked in a paper mill. But it was a long time ago, 50 years ago, in fact. And we didn't make toilet roll. But the process of making toilet roll is a 24-hour production thing anyway. And it has no sell-by date.
How do you know this? Again, a thing you know everything about.
Because I just told you I worked in a paper mill.
How do you know this?
I worked in a paper mill, and I did what Ellie suggested other people should do as well. I saw some...
Double wipe.
I saw some idiot on Twitter I'll tell you his name as well, James Melville. He ought to be banned from Twitter. He's an idiot.
I love this. This is great. There you are.
Yeah, yeah.
There you are. He took us an hour.
He put a tweet out saying, oh, everybody stop piling toilet rolls. You're going to wish we never left the European Union now because all of our wood pulp comes from Europe. That's a lie. It doesn't. We get our wood pulp from all over the world, including the UK. In fact, most of our wood pulp comes from China anyway, but that's neither here nor there. The fact is, in the UK, there are more than 20 manufacturers of toilet roll. Everyone's heard of Andrex. Kimberly Clark, who make Andrex, are based in Maidstone. But there are small toilet roll manufacturers all over the country, and some of the bigger, smaller ones, if you like, are in Blackburn and in Lancashire. Toilet roll production is a 24-hour job. Yeah, you run off paper on a paper mill on a rolling 24-hour basis. But the fact is...
I'm going to quickly go because Stephen's ringing me from Angola. Goodbye.
OK, all right. But the fact is that you only need so much toilet roll per head of population, yeah? And if you... The only reason that you need to up production is because people keep buying it in bulk. But as I said earlier... They don't use it in bulk, yeah? So if you've got a stockpile of it at home, it's just going to last you longer.
Yeah, you might need a bigger house.
Yeah, exactly. But the point is you don't need more toilet roll, yeah? So there's not a shortage of toilet roll. So upping toilet roll production is pointless. It really is pointless because you'll never sell it eventually.
Unless it's used for... insulation in new builds.
If you find an alternative use for it, yeah, absolutely. Which is what some people are going to have to do. Otherwise, you know, what are they going to do with a house full of toilet rolls? Anyway, what I want to do now is there's a huge list here, but I want to read it out because they deserve it. It's all the finalists for the Canterbury Business Awards, which will come in up in 2 weeks' time, okay? And these are the finalists. Some of them might be on there twice, so bear with me, because they've been nominated too. So these, not winners, finalists. In the Creative Digital, finalists are Margate Football Club, THC Primary Care, and I Do Marketing. The Business Woman of the Year finalists are Gillie Monk from All Health Matters, Barbara Bootler from Blue Fox Rentals, Lydia McCowan from I Do Marketing, Adriana Fuster from Learn with Adriana, and Mika Dugan, The Escapement Margate. The finalists in the construction category are Betteridge and Milsom, Graham Kinnear Property Consultants, James Clegg Associates, Modus Construction Consultants, and Red Key Concepts. The finalists for the hospitality, food and drink category are Blue Fox Rentals, Brambles Bed and Breakfast, Secret Spices, and Time and Tide Brewing. The innovation category, the finalists are Graham Kinnear Property Consultants, Healthcare Law, Pentins, The Coaching Lab, and Time and Tide Brewing. The small business finalists are All Health Matters, Betteridge and Milsom, Healthcare Law, Horizon Scan, and Pentins. The family business finalists are... Farscape Foundation, FAR, NT Rick Scaffolding, Red Key Concept, and Secret Spices. And last but certainly not least, the finalists in the customer service category are All Health Matters, Brambles Bed and Breakfast, Horizon Scan Limited, NFU Mutual, and No Place Like Home. So congratulations to all the finalists. Now, the finalist award dinner was due to take place next week at Broome Park. Unfortunately, that's been cancelled. So there will be a finalist awards dinner later on in the year on a date and place to be announced. So do listen out for that. But congratulations to all the finalists. You're right.
I'm right.
Is he okay?
He's okay, yeah, but we still don't know if he's getting home yet or not. But right. He will get home. It's just when...
Right, but he's in Angola.
He is.
And you're moving to Rwanda.
We are.
Can't he just walk to Rwanda from where he is and stay there?
It's a little bit far, love. I know, you think
he's got
that,
nothing better
you?
To do, yeah?
Hasn't he what are you doing, love?
Hasn't he got his bike with him?
No, he hasn't.
Oh, dear.
It's so funny and he can't run.
Oh, right, so, yeah. Okay. You've got nothing, have you?
No. Done that sum it up. Did you read out about Jules?
She's
put high burden a bite vanilla web. Please help our indie restaurants, cafes, don't want to sit in a crowd. Try to support it even if you get a takeaway. phone or pre-order, take your own dishes. How about that shop, indie, retail, mentoring, hospitality, or ask for a quiet table? Absolutely. Everybody, yeah. You can adapt. And I think small businesses are in a great position. They're in a better position than like a big boat trying to steer 500, 1,000 employees. You can adapt really, really quickly. You just have to sit down and really think, okay, I've got to be creative in these horrific times.
Absolutely, yeah.
And sometimes that does mean closing a business but starting something else.
Yep.
It doesn't necessarily mean that you're going to thrive in this with the business that you've got, but you are such a creative and you can adapt and grow into the next part of this environment of business.
Mm-hmm. That's absolutely true. And I'm spending a lot of my time at the moment trying to come up with cunning ideas to move...
I have a cunning plan, as Blackadder said.
Yeah, to move my businesses forward, it's not easy at the moment.
And there are those awful decisions that you will have to make as a business owner.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's the awful thing. And you won't know what the timing is either, because we could never have ever thought this was going to ever happen.
Absolutely.
You can't have a strategy in place for this to be
insured
against in any shape or form.
And what it is, it's a concatenation of life anyway, because, you know, most businesses nowadays do have a finite lifespan, you know, because things change them. This has just happened very quickly and in a constricted space. Anyway, talking about new and different businesses, we've got a guest, unbelievably, who's been sitting there really patiently for an hour and a bit, hour and 20 minutes, and we really need to talk to her.
Let's do it.
Because she's got a very interesting business.
She has.
And I bumped into Ellie at an event that still went on.
We just didn't breathe.
Yeah, yeah. No, it was actually before it really broke, wasn't it? It was, we were at an event in Maidstone and I was introduced to Ellie and I just thought, wouldn't that be interesting to get her on the show to talk about what she does? Because we've never had anyone that does what she does. And in chatting to her, there were some issues that kind of came up that I thought were interesting. So it's an absolute pleasure to welcome Ellie Clark. And Ellie is a civil celebrant.
I am indeed.
Yeah. So I'll tell you what, Ellie, let's start off by just explaining to those people that might not know what a civil celebrant is, even.
Okay, so the major part of my business, or the piece that I enjoy the most, and I know it sounds curious to some people, is working as a civil funeral celebrant.
Right.
I also will work doing other celebratory events, and it also sounds strange to people that funerals are celebratory, but they are celebrating someone's life. Mm. So there is a definition of a civil funeral celebrant, which I will share with you, which is a civil funeral is defined as a funeral which is driven by the wishes, beliefs and values of the deceased and their family, not by the beliefs of ideology of the person conducting the funeral.
Right.
And that is where the first dichotomy arises. Because people say to me, what do you do for a living? And I go, I'm a civil funeral celebrant. And I can't even say that, a civil funeral celebrant. And they say, oh, you're a humanist then. No, I'm not. Because the ceremonies I run are not driven by the beliefs or ideologies of the person running them. And as it happens, I'm not a humanist. Humanist ceremonies are something different.
Yeah.
So people get very confused.
Mm.
So... that's sort of a little myth to be dispelled.
Absolutely. So is it fair to say that what you do is you participate, you lead a ceremony based on celebrating the person rather than a religion or a belief system? So effectively... You're doing the role that in our society is traditionally done by a vicar if you're a Church of England, or a priest if you're a Catholic, or a humanist if you're an atheist or whatever. But you're not doing any of those things. You're providing the same function without any ideology around it.
Yeah. No ideology, no liturgy. There's no, you know, when a vicar conducts a ceremony, there are certain words that he says.
Yeah.
None of that.
Yeah.
Sometimes some of that.
Yeah.
Because I very often get families come up to me and they say, oh, we want a non-religious ceremony. Can we have the Lord's Prayer? Can we sing a hymn?
Yeah.
can do all of that. You can do whatever you like. Within time, time allowing, because time slots at cemeteries and crematoria are limited.
Yeah.
Or you can book double slots and you can have 20 songs if that's what you want. Mm. It's really down to a bespoke ceremony. And I see myself as the master of ceremonies.
Yeah, absolutely. It's interesting, though, isn't it? It's interesting looking at this because you've got this cultural thing. Yeah, where quite a few people aren't particularly religious and don't ascribe to any religion and they don't go to church or synagogue or mosque or whatever. But when something happens, be it a wedding or a funeral, they still want a hymn.
Absolutely.
Yeah, because it's a cultural thing rather than a spiritual thing to some extent, isn't it?
It is. And I also think, going back to what we were talking about in the first half, that it's also a community thing.
Yeah.
There are precious few things that we can do as a society that we all know the words of.
Yeah.
Most people of an age and some younger know the Lord's Prayer.
Yeah.
They probably know the hymn, All Things Bright and Beautiful, although sometimes I think if I have to hear it again, I might lose the will. And the other thing that people can do, but they don't do at funerals, is sing the national anthem. Right. So they are kind of like a little group of things, a hymn, a popular hymn, that prayer that everybody seems to know. And it's about community, about doing something together, because there are very few things you can do at a funeral that you can do together.
Yeah.
Well, apart from feel sad or miss that person.
Yeah.
So it's actually collecting those people together and getting them to do something that's meaningful for them and for the person that they're there to celebrate, honour, whatever you want to.
Absolutely. And it is interesting, isn't it? I mean, having gone through this myself, my dad passed away a couple of years ago, and I guess it was the first funeral I've had to kind of arrange myself, if you see what I mean, you know, or be totally involved in. Obviously, I've been to loads of other funerals in, over the years, but I've never had to organise one before. And it was an interesting process. Because there's a lot of technical stuff you have to do, you know, from death certificates and all the rest of it, to then getting funeral directors and then deciding what kind of service and how you want to do it, whether you want a cremation.
See,
you've got me
here,
going now as well, yeah. A cremation.
A crematorium.
Or a burial, or whether you want to be shot into space or, you know, scattered at sea or on the centre spot of Stamford Bridge or whatever stupid thing people write in their wills. Quite often it seems to me that a lot of people take a route based on not knowing anything else, yeah? So if... In our culture, you tend to go to the Church of England because they have a church everywhere, and whether you were religious or not, you just go, well, that's what you do, isn't it? But increasingly, celebrants are more widely known now, and a lot more people have got a better idea that you don't have to do that in order to have a service.
Exactly. I will tell you a little story that amused me. I had to go for a medical appointment a while back and see a consultant in a little room, private hospital. Consultant dressed immaculately, obviously very knowledgeable. And he said to me, oh, I see here that you're marketing and communications manager. And I said, no, I was a marketing and communications manager. I'm now a civil funeral celebrant. And he said, and what is one of those? Lots of people do not know what it is or what my job is.
Yep.
So I get two reactions. I get people who go, oh, how wonderful.
Yeah.
That must be such a lovely job, or I don't know if I could do that job, or, oh, I can imagine you doing that job. Or they go, what is it?
Mm.
And it's amazing how many people still
don't know.
Don't know.
Yeah. I guess that's because we don't come across it very often.
Fortunately.
And when we do come across it, it's more likely to be at a wedding rather than a funeral, I'm assuming. And you're absolutely right. But it is something that will become more and more conscious of because it happens more and more. I just want to ask you some questions about it, though, again, because it's something, I guess, again, especially with a funeral, you know, with a wedding, people say, oh, this is what I want, and I know what music I want, and I want this, and I want that, and I want, you know, all the bits and bobs. But with a funeral, we're not always quite so sure what it is we actually want. And as you said yourself, with a religious funeral, there's normally a structure to it. Yeah, there's a liturgy. Yeah, so you know what you're going to get, you know what words you're going to get, and so on and so forth. What happens with a celebrant? If I come to you and I go, right, I want you to officiate at you know, my dog's funeral, at a funeral, of a loved one. I wouldn't know what to ask you for. Okay. Do you see what I mean?
Indeed. So, generally speaking, because people go to the funerals that people have been to, as you rightly say, that informs their decision-making process, really, because that's what they know. It's what they've always done, so that's what we're going to do.
Yeah.
That doesn't have to happen. It doesn't have to be in any particular order. There are only two things that really have to happen at a funeral. One is that the person is brought in, and the other one is that at the end of the ceremony, that their remains are disposed of.
Yep.
Everything that happens in between can be anything that you want it to be.
Right.
So what tends to happen is people will have a little bit of a chat. Probably might be me. I try and encourage families to speak. If family members want to speak, it's lovely for family members to speak if they are able.
Yeah.
It's horrendous if they're not able and they want to, and then it all falls to pieces.
Yeah, sure.
So I'm normally there with their script, standing behind them, waiting to catch them. So there's usually a piece of music coming in. There's a piece of music in the middle after you've had the eulogy or the tribute or the readings or whatever. A little bit of time to reflect on what you've heard, which, if I write the eulogy, which most families want me to do, I try to capture the very essence of that person.
Well, I was going to ask about that, because that's the interesting bit, isn't it? Because without being rude to established churches, they tend to take the easy route, because they'll read some passages from the Bible that are apposite to a life, but it could be anybody, and they'll just insert deceased's name. So for you as a celebrant, presumably it's very rare that you would know the deceased at all, or their family. So how do you go about having things to say about them?
So what I do, or what most celebrants do, is we arrange, usually through the funeral director, although another myth is that you do not have to go to a funeral director for them to direct you towards a celebrant or a vicar or whoever. You can go in and say, I would like this person to take the ceremony. I then liaise with the funeral director so we all know what's going on. And then I will arrange to meet the family at a convenient time to them. Normally in our society, we've normally got a 2 to 3 week turnaround time.
Yep.
So there is time. We meet the relevant members of the family. So sometimes it's just one person. Sometimes it's a room full of people all chucking pieces of information in and interesting things. And it's great what comes out, because they sit and they tell you very earnestly. And then somebody will say at the end, oh, do you remember the time that X, Y, and Z happened? And it's the most relevant bit of information. So there's a lot of personal interaction. I would also like to say here that with the current situation, I think that personal interaction is going to have to be by telephone or Skype or conference call or whatever. But there is a lot of personal relationships that have to be built very quickly. I then take copious notes, take them away, and spend time putting them together, not as a, he was born in this year and then he went to school at that school and then in 19 whatever he started working. That's not what I want to do.
Yep.
It's not interesting for people sitting there, and most of the people know. You create a story, a true story, around that person's life. And I always hope, and I think it happens quite a lot, everybody in that room has had a particular relationship with the person who has died. And very often they don't know what the content of the relationship is with somebody else. So they have, I didn't know that.
Yeah.
I didn't know he used to go driving and driving the elderly when he was actually older than the elderly people that he was driving. I didn't know he got that medal in the war.
Yeah.
I never knew that about him.
Yeah.
And I always hope that at the end of that ceremony, everyone in that room goes away with a new piece of information.
There's a revelation.
Yes.
Yeah, okay.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So that's sort of key to, I think, what is important in a ceremony. And also...
I just got to say, that's a massive talent to be able to, under those circumstances, to be able to dig out information from people. It's a massive talent to have enough material. You know, when people are sad anyway and mourning the passing of a loved one, to actually be able to sit there, get information out of them to build a story with.
Mm, thank you. Yeah. Well, it's a funny thing. My background, I worked in financial services for... Right. 11 years.
Yeah.
And I'm not a financial advisor planner. In fact, I'm the worst person in the world. I can just about manage to put pounds in a piggy bank. But my job was marketing and communications and client experience. And the first line, the first person that people spoke to when they rang our company was me.
Right.
Because people go, oh, well, I've got this pension and I want to know. And I used to say, no, I'm afraid I can't give you any financial advice. What I need to do is for you to tell me the things that worry you, the things that concern you. And there are two things I've discovered that people don't like talking about: death and money. So it's actually the same skill.
Yeah, it's so frustrating.
Moved into a different arena.
Yeah, yeah.
So I used to have to put together a background on that person and give it to the financial planners so that when they met that person, it was as if they'd met them already, and they'd go, oh, so your wife's name's Lydia, and you live in Berkshire, and you've got three dogs, and I understand you go sailing. And they're sitting there thinking, wow, how do they know all this? Because I've already spoken to them, and it creates the relationship.
Right, okay.
So that's...
It's a transferable skill that you
it wasn't okay. one that I'd anticipated.
You've moved one step, Ellie, from pension to death.
Exactly. Well, kind of the two things sometimes run into each other.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
So that is my background.
Okay.
I'm writing, and so that's all part and parcel of it.
Okay. Can I kind of change tack a little bit now and ask you, you chose to make a career change from financial services, marketing and communications into becoming a celebrant.
Yeah.
I want to do two things here. I want to find out what made you do that. And I also want to find out how you do that. Yeah. So one day you woke up and you went, do you know what? I'm fed up with financial services. I want to get involved in funerals.
Like you do.
But having made a decision to want to do something like that, how does one go about becoming a celebrant?
Okay, so my little story is that I had already decided that I wanted to pursue this route before I ever made the change.
Yeah.
Driven by personal circumstances. In brief, I lost two very close family members in the same year. And the thing that struck me was something that one person did when I lost my mum. She was German. And... it was actually the chaplain at the hospital. And he said to me, do you think, this was when my mum was still alive, do you think it would be comforting for your mum if I went in and said the Lord's Prayer in German? And I was blown away by the thoughtfulness of that action.
Yeah.
And it was very comforting for my mum. And it was very comforting for me because I hadn't even thought. All I was thinking was, oh, my goodness, you know, my mum is very poorly.
Mm.
And that stuck with me. And I thought, do you know what? I'd love to do something.
What a lovely thing to do.
Incredible thing to do. So it was in the back of my mind that as I was approaching retirement, that I might want
You nearly gave it away there, Ellie.
I nearly did. Yeah, I'm going to retire.
Because Bird's 50 next week.
I'm going to retire when I'm 47.
Yeah.
So as I was approaching retirement, I wanted to have something to do that wasn't involving getting on a train, going to London, fighting my way on the underground, etc. I wanted to do something that was local and something that was fulfilling. And I always say to people, it's amazing because it took me over 40 years to find my vocation.
but it's funny though, isn't it? Because you might have found, though, that earlier on in your life, it wouldn't have been relevant to you. It's because it kind of resonated with you now.
I think it's life experiences
as
well.
Exactly.
So I then got made redundant. And instead of going, boo, I was, hooray, I've been made redundant. Then I spent about 3 months thinking, what am I going to do? I'm actually redundant. I don't know what to do. And I thought, that's stupid. I know exactly what I need to do. So I researched how to train as a celebrant. There are numerous organisations. If you just went onto the World Wide Web and put in celebrant training, a host of organisations would come up.
Right.
I found one that I identified one that sounded like the right one for me. I then found out, remarkably, that I could get a grant, not a loan, a grant to do that training.
Oh, wow. Who, just out of interest, where do those grants, are they government
now,
grants? Or?
That's interesting. It is a government grant, and I can't think off the top of my head because that wasn't the question I was anticipating. But what I can do is, if anybody's interested, I can let you know, or people can contact me through my website and ask the question. My website is www.ellythecelebrant.co.uk, not to be confused with Nelly the Elephant, but hopefully memorable.
Yeah.
So booked up the training, got in touch with the company. You have to do a sort of a pre-qualification thing. They want you to write stuff so that they can see that you can actually, you know, string a sentence together. And as luck would have it, I was going to have to wait, I think, about 6 months to do the training. And they said, oh, actually, they rang me back and said, we've had a cancellation. Do you think you could do the distance learning bit that normally takes 12 weeks in 3 weeks? well, haven't got anything else to do.
So there's a distance learning thing.
Distance learning, 12 weeks.
Yeah.
Very, very... It's quite intense, but it's quite easy to follow. It's logical.
Yeah.
Followed by a week's residential.
Okay.
And that's much more intense.
Right.
And then you have to obviously write, you have to be able to speak, you have to understand funeral directors and the business, if you like.
Yeah.
And then you end up through that scheme and through that training provider, who were called civil ceremonies, you end up getting a certificate and you become a diploma and it's a level 3 qualification, nationally recognised, which is the equivalent of an A level. And Bob's your uncle, really.
Okay.
And then you've got to go out
and get business
and forge those relationships, and you know, it is an awkward one, because obviously I was sort of thinking, when you said earlier, you know, you emailed all your clients, Bird. A bit awkward for me.
Yeah. You're thinking of dying.
Who is your client? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Which one's your client?
Yeah.
So you're building relationships with funeral directors, and you're also getting your name out there. And it's taken me, I retrained in sort of late summer 2018.
Right.
And it has taken me until now to start getting referral business. And that's business where people have attended a ceremony that I've taken and they've asked for me.
Yeah.
So it's a slow burn.
Of course it is, yeah.
Bad choice of words. But it is,
I see what you did there.
I didn't do it on purpose. because I don't take it lightly, but I do treat it.
Yeah.
The worst thing that I think I could do is to go into a family and be very gloomy.
Yeah.
I don't go in laughing my head off, but it's amazing how often you go in and meet families and there's lots of laughter and then there's lots of crying and then there's more laughter, because that person, usually they've had a whole life, they've brought up a family, or they've had an interesting career, they've done crazy things, they've done interesting jobs, and there's lots of stuff to be uplifting.
It's a celebration. It's a celebration of someone's life. And although we're sad about the passing of that life, for the most part, it's a celebration. I guess the only caveat to that is if the deceased is a very young child or something, in which, you know,
it's
they
a very different thing.
Which is a very different thing to officiate at, isn't it? It must be hellishly difficult as well. But for the most part, certainly if someone's lived a full life, it's a celebration.
It is.
Yeah.
You know, we all aspire to live a long and fulfilled life.
Mm.
So...
Can I ask, so what's the difference between a registrar and a celebrant? So if I was going to get married, because we've got Martin White, the lovely Martin White, he said, Debs and I are celebrating our 20th wedding anniversary on the 24th, and we were married on a bridge in New Zealand by a fantastic marriage celebrant. So what's the difference?
So I don't know what the difference is in New Zealand. The difference here is that a registrar who would marry you, they have to be registered to fill all the certificates out, which a celebrant isn't. Generally, they can be both.
Got it.
So very often the weddings that you attend where there's a celebrant, there's normally been
a civil wedding
marriage.
As well.
There's been a civil wedding. So my stepdaughter's getting married on the 19th of May.
Fingers crossed.
But that's the civil ceremony. That's the piece of paper everybody signs ceremony, and then on the Saturday, fingers crossed, she's having a massive great big celebration. Lovely dress. And
are you doing it, Ellie?
No, I'm not.
Why?
No, I'm not, because I think I want to concentrate on wearing a lovely dress having a lovely day. It's a bit like a busman's
holiday. Not business, is it?
No. And no, I wouldn't feel...
So you, if I wanted to get married in this...
Again?
Yeah.
Well, we've all been there.
not as many times as me. But if I wanted to get married...
Bird's got a season ticket.
Thank God Stephen's not listening. He would be dirty. No, he actually wouldn't. It'd be me if it was the other way around. It would be like, she's talking nonsense. Anyway, if I wanted to get married in, a forest...
Yeah.
I would have you in the forest with me rather than a registrar.
Possibly.
Right.
Because the place has to be registered. Generally speaking, it has to be a building.
Yeah.
Got it.
So even if it's a gazebo, I'm just thinking of a place, Sprivers, down near Horseman Den.
Yeah.
They've got a sort of a gazebo place, and that is the registered bit for getting married.
Got it.
Yeah.
So it has to take place in an edifice.
What funny stories, Ellie, have you got to tell us? There must be some endless.
Funny stories. For me, I haven't acted... Most of my funerals, fortunately...
Funerals, they can be weddings.
Well, I've been to a wedding where everybody ended up having a big punch-up. Like,
which weddings and funerals,
standard,
yeah.
Fairly standard.
What's wrong with that, Ellie?
Yeah, fairly standard, that.
Never happened.
It's Kent.
Never happened at a funeral, though I have had funerals where I've not been allowed to mention previous partners.
Right.
And there was one funeral in particular where it was a bit strange because the lady had a husband, clearly, and she'd had a son, but I wasn't allowed to mention the fact that she'd ever been married because the two families hated each other, so that's always a bit tricky.
Right.
I have many celebrant friends who've had far more hilarious stories than mine, including the lady who said that she stood up as everybody was going out, and there was a very elderly chap at the back of the crematorium, and as he stood up, his trousers fell down. And he was mortified, and she said, "It's okay, I used to be a nurse," and made it all better.
It's an interesting thing that you're doing, Ellie. And as you say, there are still a lot of people that aren't familiar with it, and a lot of people that actually would want to use a celebrant that don't know that they exist. You know, because we do live in a fairly secular world these days, and although most people fill in this country anyway, most people fill out a census form by saying C of E because they can't think of anything else to put. Mm-hmm. They've never seen the inside of a church.
No.
And aren't likely to either, but kind of go that route because they can't think of any other way to go. So it's an interesting thing that has started to come to the fore now, that as more and more people hear about celebrants, they take it on board as a way forward and a way of doing things.
Absolutely.
So thank you for that. Thank you for sharing that with us. Just give us your Nelly the Elephant website address again. Yeah, it's going to live with me forever now. That.
Well, that's what I did.
Yeah.
Well, that's obviously that marketing background coming into play. Yeah. It's www.
World Wide Web.
ellythecelebrant.co.uk.
All I hear is Nelly the elephant.
The elephant, is going to say. Yeah. Ellie the celebrant packed her trunk and off she went to the circus.
So when you're doing CPR, there you go. You don't use that tune anymore, by the way. But anyway.
I'm on Facebook, the Kent and Sussex Celebrant.
Yep.
Or the Kent and Sussex Celebrant. And I'm on Twitter, Ellie C. Clark at Celebrant Ellie, because you can't fit Ellie the Celebrant into your Twitter.
So it's Celebrant Ellie is your Twitter name, isn't it? Yeah. Fantastic. Ellie, thank you so much for that. And we wish you continued success with what you're doing. Thank you for sharing that with us. A fascinating insight into the work that you're doing and the kind of things that you do. We're almost at the end of the show.
I've got fascinating. I'll tell you what, this will finish you off brilliantly.
Go on then.
Amazon are hiring an additional 100,000 employees in the US to meet the surges in demand from online shopping.
Wow, yeah.
Ah, dear.
Brilliant.
Isn't that interesting?
It's, you know, there's always ups and downs in all of these things,
peaks
isn't it?
Peaks and troughs.
Yeah. There's always a silver lining to every cloud at the macro level. You know, for those of us that have lost our business, it ain't too brilliant. But for other people, it's great.
That's right.
Yeah.
Interesting.
It is. And there's always something that you can do. And as you said, Bird, earlier, it's true that basically what you have to do is reinvent yourself and do something different. I'm going to be a celebrant is what I'm going to do.
You'd be great.
I'd be awful, wouldn't I?
Oh, no, you would terrible. Be great.
I'd be terrible. I'd be telling jokes. I'd be going, here's another thing.
No, I don't think you would. You're very caring. And I think you would be brilliant.
Yeah.
Standing there emceeing. You wouldn't say you were a celebrant, you're saying MC of a funeral. Yeah, that's what you'd be like.
Dun, 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 dun. And our next cadaver is.
Did you know?
My dad, bless him, when he passed away, my mum got really freaked out. In his will, he insisted that he was buried in the New Forest. Not in a cemetery, just somewhere in the forest.
Was he having a laugh or something?
No. And my mum got really upset. How are we going to do that? I went, you can't do it, Mum. It's illegal. And she said, but it's in his will. And a will has no legal force whatsoever. He can ask to be buried on the moon, but we can't do it, yeah? But it's in his will. And I, Mum, he can put what he likes in the will. It's not legal to just take a body out into the woods and bury it. You just can't do that. But luckily, I live in Tenterden. And bizarrely, there's a cemetery in Tenterden that has a woodland burial plot.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and we managed at great expense to get him a plot there. But it is funny that these things happen and people... Because it's not something we do very often, is it? Thank goodness. So, you know... When you come across these things, you don't always know, you know.
It's not often, but the thing is, and kind of this is my little soapbox, is that people don't talk about death and dying.
I know, it's so sad.
And they don't talk about their last wishes. No. And then families can end up, you know, at loggerheads because one says this and one says that.
Yeah.
So I'm kind of a bit of a... You know, a warrior for talking about this terrible subject.
Bless her, my mum, bless her. My sister and I, we had, my mum's taken out a funeral plan, which is like an insurance policy, that where you plan your funeral and pay for it in advance, and it fits the price. And the chap came to talk about it, and my mum, which is so funny, we're going, what would you like, Mum? Don't care, won't be there, will I? What music do you want? I don't care, I won't hear it. Okay, you're not happy with this, are you, Mum? No, I'm just bloody paying for it, aren't I?
Yeah, I'm paying for my own funeral. Yeah. Yes, you are.
Yes,
what
you
should
are.
We have?
What music do you want, Mum? Well, she said, wish me luck as you wave me goodbye. I mean, really? And she went, I don't care, I won't be able to hear it, will I?
Do you know what? We've always talked about it as a family, and I used to talk about it with my nan and granddad. They brought me up and I think my nursing, that was the biggest thing that I would say was missing, was I was always blessed when I obviously was nursing and was there to support families and people dying. And I just thought, what a shame when the one time you need to be communicating, actually that's the one thing that always stops. And so we actually talk about it as a family. Like my children will say, right, oh, what songs do I want? I don't want this person there, or this has to happen. Or, and I think for us it works, and it's not, I don't think it's macabre, and I don't think it's very, I just think it's part of living. And that's the honest truth for myself and my values and beliefs. But I think it's a shame when people don't have that knowledge. So I knew what my nan and granddad wanted when they died. We knew everything because we always talked about it. You know, I know my daughter goes, she went, Mum, I really hope I die before you because I'm going to come into Peter Pan music through the thing. And she's got this big pink thing going on. She said, and the boys just won't do it. So she said, and I think that's quite... It's just funny talking about it because it's not so, you know, she'll have the Peter Pan music, for goodness sake. You know, I can't say that she'll be lowered into the church through the ceiling and all of that. But
on a wire.
You've got it. But I think what we're doing is talking openly about it.
Yeah.
Which I think is the biggest thing when people are dying and in death.
Yep. It is so, so important. I can't stress.
Yep.
And it's not easy. But the more you talk about it, it becomes normal.
Absolutely. I've got a few tweets that I want to read out before the end of the show. Jules has been on, Jules Sirkin, and she's asked me to give the lovely Rebecca Nutt a special Business Bunker shout-out. Rebecca runs Serenity Becker over in Whitstable, which is a health and beauty salon. And she has actually adopted some of the things that Andrew was talking about earlier to keep her salon open. So she's, you know, spent a lot of time making sure that everything's clean and disinfected and chairs are kept away from other people and doing things so that people don't feel that they're being crowded there. So a big shout out to Serenity Becker, Rebecca Nutt and the team, who's running their business as usual and getting through quite a lot of hand sanitizer and soap. But they're based in Whitstable and Faversham. All clean, no coughs, and shop local. So thank you for bringing that to our attention, Jules. And also, the lovely folks at Diamond Circle Weddings said, we did an event last Sunday at the Broom Park Hotel supporting Kent Wish by lighting the house in the charity's corporate colours. And the charity raised £7,500 doing firewalks, and they've given us some photographs of that. And wow, how stunning does that look against the background of a blue house? Is people doing the firewalks? So check that out. Have a look at their Twitter handle, which is DC Weddings UK. Check it out.
Right, just before, I've just been seeing some stuff coming through now. So China, it's just, these are some really good stuff. China has closed down its last coronavirus hospital. Not enough new cases to support them. Doctors in India have been successful in treating coronavirus, combination of drugs used, blah, blah, blah. So it is going to come to an end. It will come to an end. And there's lots of things. Apple reopens all 42 China stores. Oh, my goodness, there is a God. Italy is hit hard, experts say, only because they have the oldest population in Europe.
Yeah.
So you've got lots of these things going on. There is so much to feedback on. All seven patients who were getting treated in the New Delhi hospital have recovered. So there is massive, massive positivity.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Just to put a negative spin on it, though.
Oh, what now? Yeah. No, don't you dare.
No, did you say that? It made me laugh. It made me laugh. When they stopped the isolation in China in a particular town, so people were allowed out, 88 couples immediately filed for divorce.
Yes.
So what's going to happen is the divorce numbers are going to climb, but also we're going to have a baby boom just before Christmas, aren't we?
Oh.
Don't you think?
Oh, on both counts.
Yeah.
Awful.
Or maybe both.
Well, I actually read yesterday that if this self-isolation comes into play for the over 70s, that there are going to be a lot of deaths of women killing their men.
Yeah, exactly.
Just stuck indoors with each other.
Exactly. Hey, listen, and this coming weekend, it's Mother's Day.
It is.
And unfortunately, a lot of mums ain't going to get taken out, are they? So wishing all you mums out there a lovely Mother's Day, and we will celebrate eventually in some way. We'll all be thinking of you on Mother's Day, but you're not necessarily going to get taken out this weekend.
Send chocolates through Amazon.
Exactly. You can send flowers through Interflora and you can
Interflora have adopted, what they've done now is they've just sent an email out saying they're just going to please forgive their customer service, but they've told their florists to drop their flowers on the doorstep, ring the bell and go.
Yeah.
So everybody is adapting.
Yeah, exactly.
You'll be fine. You'll be fine, my love. You will be fine.
Yeah. So anyway, that was the coronavirus Business Bunker special. We'll be back with another show next week, hopefully. For the moment, now, I want to say a massive thank you to this week's show sponsor, Fit for Trade, and to our lovely guest, Ellie Clark.
Thank you. Thanks for inviting me.
Ellie the Celebrant.
Thanks for coming in.
Yeah. Ellie the Celebrant. Do check that out. To lovely Bird, for being here with me for another couple of weeks. And for all of you lot for joining in and tweeting and emailing and all the rest of it, we will get through this. Let's go for the positive. Let's support each other. Let's go local. And we'll be back with another local Business Bunker show here on bizradio.co.uk next week, next Tuesday. So have a great week, everybody, and bye for now.
Bye.
Bye.
The Business Bunker with Paul Andrews.
This is Channel 2.